one of our better joints. Right. And if you guys could go and get him to have him show him while he's in between in the coffee place here being there. That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
What?
That model. I may not be right.
I'm not sure I am. I'm gonna call it yet.
You want to give him a cake?
As they say in church, there are plenty of seats up front. I had to get rid of them all when I came to NASA. Okay, I think we're about ready to begin. Apparently the buses have gotten back from the Catholic Church, and we're off to a good start. I noticed most of the people from Washington didn't go to church. That's probably because they're used to praying on the rest of us. The people from Huntsville are here. They told me when they came in, Eberhard Reese in particular, that they were never worried about getting to the moon, but they were quite concerned about getting back, and that's why they didn't bother to show up yesterday. I got taken to task yesterday for not having a story when I gave that little talk at the beginning. I got one that's really a terrible story, but it's got a Sunday implication, so I'll use it. It's rather quick. It involves the period when Christ was on the cross, and he'd been on the cross for about 2 hours, and an angry mob was out in front of him. And he looked down, and he finally said, well, would you believe Prince of the Jews? The episode ended yesterday, you'll recall, with our hearty little band of adventurers just arriving on the lunar surface. This morning, we pick up the scenario on the surface, and we're about to answer one of the fundamental questions. This is a question that's been raised by the scientific community. Will the science that's to be done on the lunar mission be good, or will the whole mission be of no avail? We have the answer to that. No. A veil named Bob is going to tell us about the science.
Well, this morning I'd like to cover what has transpired to date in the planning for the activities on the lunar surface. The planning for these activities is still very much in the embryo stage. There are many, many people that are involved in this, and there are many, many iterations of this planning to go yet. First of all, the very, very broad scientific objectives have been set. They have been derived by a lot of meetings between a lot of people on a national scale. The objectives are, or detailed objectives rather, are now being evolved from these. These detailed objectives are being are being focused by OSSA and are coming to us now in a fairly steady stream. From these detailed objectives, the priority of the various activities are being set. Just recently, the basic priorities were set, and they are these. First of all, of course, will be the astronaut's observations. This, of course, is inherent in whatever he does. The prime objective from the science viewpoint is to come back with as many samples of the lunar material as possible. Secondly, it is desirable, of course, to have these samples reasonably well documented, as fully documented as we possibly can. Also, the astronaut will be asked to emplace the lunar surface experiments package on the surface. This package will be operating for 1 year after his departure and will gather long-term scientific data. The setting of these priorities does set up a somewhat enigmatic situation for the mission planners, insofar as sample collection is also inherent in the fourth topic here, field geology. But as we go along here, I think you'll find out, you'll realize that there is a pretty comfortable length of time allocated to do all the scientific chores that are desired. To start off with, in planning the lunar surface mission, the basic criteria have been evolved in the overall Apollo program. These criteria are given to us as a base point, then, upon which we can build. First of all, we are allowed to take to the lunar surface 250 pounds of equipment. We are also allowed to return 80 pounds. The stowage of this equipment is shown on the right-hand slide. We have an allowable weight of 80 pounds in the ascent stage, 2 cubic feet. It is presently planned that the sample return containers, the camera, and the film will be stowed in the ascent stage. In the descent stage, we have 210 pounds allowable and 15 cubic feet. We are planning to stow in that area the lunar surface experiments package, the drill, the tools, and the radioisotope thermoelectric generator that accompanies the lunar surface experiments package. Another constraint that is put on us is the safe distance that the astronaut can operate away from the lunar module. This criteria is given to us in the form of time. By using a conservative speed, a walking speed on the lunar surface of 150 feet a minute, we convert this then into a safe separation distance from the lunar module as shown. The interaction of the site selection with the operations on the lunar surface has yet not given us any constraints, but this is under further study. The proposed lunar surface stay time has been broken up into these activities. This will be the subject of a talk by Mr. Loftus later on, but we are concerned primarily here with the 2 3-hour periods of extravehicular activity as shown, and are proceeding now to design the mission profile and the detailed timelines to suit this. There are many, many ways of putting together a profile for the lunar surface to fulfill all the scientific objectives. We'd like to emphasize that this timeline that we have put together here is still a very preliminary one. It will be changed many times before we're through, and it might even be changed so that this is unrecognizable. However, this is a good baseline from which to start and to assemble critiques and mold this into a final acceptable shape. The first thing that the astronaut will do will be to get gross observations on the lunar surface, the lunar topography, both from his visual acquisition and through photographs. The next thing, as planned, one man will descend to the surface, do whatever operational tasks are required of him, and then, in a partnership activity, will start to do sample collection. The detailed sharing of tasks of the two astronauts has yet to be worked out, but it looks ample. There is ample time for them to collect many good samples that are reasonably well documented. That the as planned now, the astronauts will collect as many samples as they can on the first excursion. However, if on the field geology trip they can get better samples, better documented samples, these will take the place of some of the samples collected on the first trip for return to Earth. We got that. I think. On the first sample collection?
Yes, please.
Okay. we haven't worked this out to that depth of detail, Dr. Miller. What we're doing now is that the first samples, the priority on the first samples is just to get samples that are maybe have no documentation whatever. You just pick them up as fast as you can. However, in designing the timeline, it looks that there is about an hour's time that they can collect samples, in which they can collect samples. This leaves sufficient time then for deployment of the lunar surface experiments package in that first excursion. Now, in that hour of sample collection, they will try and document as much as possible the samples that they will collect. It is also planned then in the second excursion that they will do their field geology trip trying to fulfill all the detailed objectives of the science people. Now, when they get those samples, if those samples are of more worth to the science people, they will take the place of some of the earlier samples gathered for the return trip. Huh? Now, in the sample collections, the astronauts, of course, play an extremely key role in this, and the yield from this is directly proportionate to the how well trained they are, how knowledgeable they are in the field geology. All during the excursions, there will be two-way voice between both the crew and the MSFN so that a complete and up-to-date record of all their activities and all their impressions can be kept. It is not decided as much yet whether we need to augment the lighting on the moon. However, this is a subject of study at the moment. We don't know whether we have to supply them with a lamp or whether they have enough visual adaptability, and we just have to supply a flash to adapt the camera to some of the darker scenes. The tool stowage in the LEM, or the total amount of equipment stowed in the descent stage, is shown here. The tools are on the right. They can be extracted separately to be used on the first excursion. The package on the left is the Lunar Surface Experiments package. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But as you see on the timeline, we have approximately 65 minutes, approximately an hour, that can be assigned to the first excursion. Some of the tools are shown here. He will have a staff to support his camera. He will, of course, the sample return containers. There's two boxes that are stowed in the ascent stage. He will have a tool carrier upon which are his sundry tools for geological use. He will have sampling tubes to get subsurface samples. And, of course, he will have a weighing scale so that he can bring back as close to the full complement of 80 pounds as possible. Another major factor that the astronauts will have to take into account on the lunar surface is the contamination of the surface from the engine exhaust of the descent stage. The contours of contamination of nitric oxide is shown here. The astronauts will have to use their discretion in their traverse from the LEM to try and get away from the points of major contamination, but this will have to be tempered with the geological observations. This stuff shown here is extremely quantitative at the present time, but we hope to get it identified more fully as time goes on, and this is actively being pursued at the moment. The second part of the first excursion is shown here, which the next major job the astronauts will do is to deploy the Lunar Surface Experiments package. The Lunar Surface Experiments package is being designed to be deployed by one man. It would take him approximately an hour and 25 minutes. The normal operation, though, is to have two men do it together, and this takes approximately 1 hour. The package is stowed in the descent stage in the aft left-hand corner along with the tools. The package that we had showed a minute ago is here. Lunar Surface Experiments package, there is a radioisotope thermoelectric generator. You can just barely see it here in the back behind the tools. There is the fuel for this generator. Is mounted externally to the LEM on the left-hand side of this compartment. One of the first jobs the astronaut must do is to take these two packages out of their stowed position, place them on the ground, then transfer the fuel capsule, which is at about 1300 degrees, to the generator. The generator at this point is cold. It takes approximately about 1 hour for it to come up to full temperature. It reaches 250 degrees, though, in approximately 10 minutes. This is a definite safety hazard for the astronaut. This is being very thoroughly studied, and the astronauts will need a pretty intense training to make sure that this operation goes well without harm to the astronauts. Now, the experiments that will be flown in the LSAP are currently under development. You can see that the ones that are the most probable ones to fly on the first flight are the passive seismic experiment, the magnetometer, the solar wind, and the ion detector. However, as we proceed through the development of these experiments, we still can have some, we still might hit some kind of a snag in developing one of these prime experiments, in which case one of the backup experiments will take its place. The LSAP right now is can still accept any one of these experiments within its weight, power, and volume restrictions. And approximately next January, we will have to then decide. That's the time of release of the final flight package drawings. We will have to decide at that time what are the experiments that will go on the first trip to the moon, and from then on, we will have to stick with those using sparing to make sure that we get them out there. There are two methods of carrying the LSAP. One is shown here, what we call the barbell mode. These packages are rather bulky. They're not too heavy, but they're rather bulky. And this affords the astronaut pretty good balance. The other method of carrying the two packages is to carry each one of them suitcase style. They each have a handle on them and can be carried either separately or one in each hand. The selection of the carry mode of the LSAP is the subject of our simulations, and as time goes on, one will be selected as the preferred mode. The deployed LSAP is depicted here on the left-hand slide. The first thing the astronaut does when he gets to the site that he has selected to emplace the station is to set the generator down and have it firmly positioned on the surface. He then places the central station 10 feet away. This 10 feet is required so that the radiator has a good thermal view factor to ensure that it doesn't develop any hot spots. The next thing he does is to take each of the experiments off the central station and set them a little bit to one side. He then raises the heat shield, the sun shield, rather, on top of the central station and erects the antenna. While one man is erecting the antenna and aiming it at the Earth, the other man then can start deploying the instruments. The central station, close up, looks like this. The sun shield is raised, as I mentioned previously, and the central station must be aligned with the ecliptic so that the sun never strikes the bottom box there, which is the all the electronics for our communications and data gathering. The antenna is a helix antenna. The astronaut will align the little platform at the base of the antenna with a bubble level and a sun compass. He then looks into the base of the antenna at a mirror, which then he can look right up through the barrel of the antenna and aim it at the Earth. There is an adjustment an optical offset set in the top, which you must set in the an optical adjustment for the particular or current libration period that he's at. The MSFN will be used for the LSEP. There has been allocated a single frequency for each of three LSEPs that's planned. A single uplink frequency will be used to command all three LSEPs. The prime mode of operation is that as soon as the central station is set up and the antenna aimed, the astronaut will ask for a command to be sent to start the central station and to receive confirmation that it is working. The backup mode is that if this is the command system for some reason or other does not work, he can manually start the central station going. All the data transmissions most all of them are planned for a 30-foot antenna. If the active seismic experiment does fly on the first flight, it requires a fairly large bit rate, as shown, and will need an 85-foot antenna coverage. The active seismic experiment, of course, is only used, or its duration, rather, is only about 20 minutes, so that we do need about 20 minutes coverage by an 85-foot antenna. The real-time display of data at the Mission Control Center is still being formulated. At the present time, it is visualized that we will get engineering data to diagnose the well-being of the system. We will get some scientific data for the same purpose. The normal mode of acquiring scientific data will be to tape it at the MSFN station and fly it back here for dissemination. The magnetometer is the first experiment to get deployed. There is a requirement that it be deployed 50 feet away from the central station to get away from any magnetic coupling with the communication system. The magnetometer must also be oriented so that the magnetic field can be assessed in its three axes properly. To do this, all the crew is asked to do is to align one of the booms with the LEM, as long as we know what azimuth he is from the LEM. The next experiment to get deployed is the supersthermal ion detector. It also must be separated from the central station and will be deployed 60 feet. Along with this supersthermal ion detector, there is a cold cathode pressure gauge. It has to be separated from this box by a distance of about 3 feet. The astronaut just has to set this down and do a very rough leveling of it and also align it with the ecliptic roughly. The third experiment to get deployed is the passive seismometer. Here, the astronaut will be asked to use a fair amount of judgment in selecting a good site for the passive seismometer so that it will have very good coupling with the lunar surface, with the lunar soil. Yeah. Because this is only separated from the central station by 10 feet, it will dictate to some extent the selection of the site for emplacing the central station, insofar as a good footing is required for it. This is not an anomaly because we really do have to have a good footing for the central station so that there is no shift of it and the antenna alignment might be preserved throughout the year. The fourth experiment that is deployed is the solar wind experiment. It is also deployed only a short distance from the central station, but it must be put, the only real requirement is that it should be put as far away from the generator as possible, so that we do not get interactions of the radiation of the generator with the solar wind that we're trying to measure. In putting together this preliminary timeline, we did have a lot of choices in how we could do it. This is, as I said earlier, is just one of them. It shows, however, that there is about an hour that the crew can use on their sample collection traverses. They can, within the limitations of the EMU, they can go up to 2,000 feet away. This is put together so that it will meet all the operational constraints that we have been confronted with so far. The second excursion is even less detailed at this moment. The second excursion, as we see it right now, will be devoted entirely to the field exploration. In this excursion, the astronauts will be, well, it will be planned and the astronauts will be asked to fulfill all the detailed scientific requirements, such as collecting aseptic samples, getting subsurface samples, getting vertical cross sections by perhaps digging a trench, and this sort of thing. As I say, all these objectives have not been delineated yet, but are in the process of being defined at the moment. And as soon as we get that, we can then start putting together timelines and iterating through the process of coming up with a satisfactory final timeline. One of the basic rules in this second excursion will be for the astronauts to get as many samples from diverse locations as possible, and to provide a very, very good documentation of each sample that is collected. Here, as we see it, this will be a partnership operation again, where one astronaut will be collecting samples, the other astronaut will be actually documenting them by way of
a voice.
From all the presently identified scientific objectives, the astronaut has a fair amount of choice as to what he does to fulfill all these objectives. This is just a representation to show that he can walk out about 3,000 feet, if so desired, away from it, but of course we'll have to always be working his way back towards the LEM as time goes on. The detailed definition of these various traverses is the subject of a pretty intense simulation program which is currently being planned. Some of it is underway, but the meat of it is still being planned. We feel that this simulation program is a very key program in setting together the mission profiles and the detailed timelines. The objectives of this simulation are threefold. One, to derive design information, and for design proofing of all our equipments. It also gives us the information required for detailed mission planning, and also the criteria upon which will be built the operational procedures and the crew training. At present, the simulation program, as we see it, can be depicted this way. The key operation in this program is a group of people of Manned Spacecraft Center and USGS who take all the inputs from the science people, the operational people, and the equipment designs, come up with a satisfactory simulation program to meet the objectives shown on the left. This is then passed along to a second group, who in some cases are the same people, who will do the detailed planning and implementation. It is then the actual simulations will be carried out both at the USGS and at Manned Spacecraft Center here. The outcome of these are collated. There is a feedback then to go back into the design process, and the other two outputs go into crew training and mission planning. This is one of the examples that of simulations that have been done to date. Here you see a 6G simulation rig done on the simulated lunar surface. Here is a same thing, only in a KC-135. There are also laboratory simulations being carried out continuously to try and develop the proper equipment that will be compatible with the crew and his suit and gloves. There are many, many special task simulations that have been done and will be done. Here you can see the astronaut putting together the antenna of the central station of the lunar surface experiments package. Oh, there's still some more. What happened? Still more fun. We had one other slide showing you all the various simulations that have been done, and what remains to be done. There have been a number of simulations done. These have mostly been done, however, with early prototype equipment and with early suits. There are a number of these that will have to be repeated with the more final equipment, and there are a number that will have to be done because they have not been done previously. As far as maintaining program flexibility, we think this is real important insofar as the scientific objectives are still coming to us. They're still being formulated. As I mentioned earlier, the lunar surface package is being designed to accommodate almost any grouping of the candidate experiments, and interchange will be possible up until early next year, at which time we will have a configuration freeze for the flight articles. The package is also being designed so that three of them can operate on the lunar surface, and we hope that subsequent missions after the first one will be used to complement the first mission. The equipments, oh there, finally got it. On the simulation summary, you'll see that there are a number of checks there. It shows that there have been a fair number of simulations done to date. So this is being reviewed very seriously right now, because these simulations have been done on early prototype equipment and with the early suits. So a lot of these will have to be repeated with the final equipment. In conclusion then, we feel that the planning of the lunar surface mission, lunar surface activities, must not be overplanned, that the astronaut must be used, his judgments and his flexibility and selectability must be used. We still have quite a long ways to go yet in getting detailed mission profiles. We have been making, I think, fairly large steps in achieving this recently, and we will. But we are looking forward to firming these up before the end of the year. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Are there any comments, discussion? We had a little heckling from the audience in the middle of that talk. Dr. Miller's question is, how does a crew sleep in the LEM during the six-hour period? There are pictures of this coming up tomorrow, just to keep you baited on that. Basically, they close their eyes. Chuck?
Yes. The idea is that
the question was, are they going to take
photographs? Documentation of each sample is very important, and they will be taking. They will be describing what they're doing and taking photographs of almost everything. Just how all this is done yet, we really don't know, but it's coming along now.
Dr. Reese. The question is, why the astronauts sleep at the same time? We'll cover that again tomorrow, Bharat. I think the basic point is that they found in the Gemini missions that there's a kind of distraction if things are going on at the same time, and that we can, with reasonable safety, do things in parallel instead of trading off and doing it in series. John? The question is, what's happened to the TV, or is that unscientific? Well, we've had a little TV problems in Block 1 about whether it's in or out, but for Block 2, there is still TV. It's just not considered part of the scientific package. More questions? Jay?
How much real-time communications and feedback with scientists on Earth do you anticipate as a result of
things they see during the first excursion and real-time changes in plans as to what to look at in the second excursion? We expect there will be a fair amount of that. The current planning, which still is very much in the embryo stage, as I said, is that we will have a experiments advisory room at the Mission Control Center who will keep abreast of everything that's going along. And these people will have a definite feedback then into the astronaut activities.
And I think it's also quite possible the TV will play a significant role in that, but it hasn't been defined completely at the present time. Yes?
Was a fixed TV camera looking back at the Earth considered as one experiment at any time?
Not to my knowledge.
Any more questions or comments? Yes? Okay, at these sun angles, what do you expect the temperatures on the lunar surface to be?
Approximately, it's about plus 200, I think, but I'm not.
I think that's right. The temperature comes up pretty quickly and is more, I think, I'm not sure about this, more or less constant during the daytime. Yes?
Do I understand that?
No, we can take 250 pounds to the lunar surface. We then have another constraint put on us that we can only carry 210 in the descent stage, 80 in the ascent stage. This comes to 290. But the total cannot be over 250.
those numbers recognize are spec numbers, and they're kind of round at the present time.
Yeah.
The nominal numbers have been from time immemorial, this 80 pounds coming back. Now, why it never was 100, I don't know, but nobody's ever changed it, so it's been 80 pounds since the first specs were written, as a matter of fact. If it came out 82 or 83 or 85 or 79, it probably wouldn't make all that much difference. Joe Gavin just turned white. Dennis?
We're not bringing the camera back.
Why are we bringing the camera back?
In the ascent stage on the way to the lunar surface, we will have our sample return containers, the camera, and the film. On the way back, we will have the filled sample return containers and the film. Yeah.
Yes.
Will there be any scientific equipment in the CSM?
I believe the answer for these early missions is no. We've concentrated primarily on the scientific equipment in the LEM, and of course the payload comes back in the CSM. It has to get transferred to the CSM, but the general concept of the mission as of right now, in order to keep the mission simple, is not to be doing scientific experiments on the way out or back. If there are no more questions, I think we'll move on then. See if we can get off the surface. As a matter of fact, if you think back some 4 years, probably the most difficult part of the decision to do lunar orbit rendezvous was the question of the ease of rendezvous, particularly at the moon. Incidentally, we're not going to take a coffee break till about 10:30. We'll break in the middle of Morris's talk. We, through the Gemini program and through a lot of additional simulations, I think are in pretty good shape as far as our confidence in being able to do rendezvous. This next talk discusses in some detail how the rendezvous actually goes. You know also that we're having a significant amount of financial problems on the program. We've been worrying about how to finance the program. We've thought of going to the Morris plan. I'm not sure whether we'll do that or not, but we have adopted the Morris plan for rendezvous, and the Morris named Jenkins is going to tell us about it now.
I was thinking we might break after this.
Yeah, you just announce the break.